With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome back. Junkies coming to you live from Nationals Park. On 106.7 The Fan and NBC Sports Washington. And joining us right now,
man of the hour,
is
right?
Mike Rizzo, president and GM of the Washington Nationals, as we go in the clubhouse with Mike Rizzo, presented by Burke and Herbert Bank, unexpectedly different.
Congratulations,
Mike.
Man.
Thank you, guys.
How's
Appreciate
it feel?
It.
I mean, it's Feels a no-brainer. Good, yeah. Should have happened a long time ago.
It was, it was something we've been talking about. We finalized it. A day or so ago, just kind of dotted the I's and crossed the T's. And
did you save it for kind of the PR of opening day?
It really wasn't that. It just kind of fell into it, and then we kind of rushed to get it, done to, this morning. But it was something that, it really wasn't. There was no deadline to it. There was no plan to get it done before today. But once we got to the point, we felt that it would be a good day, opening day here at home, be a good day to
Perfect.
Announce it since we got it done last night.
Were you
night.
Ever legitimately concerned that it wasn't going to happen?
No, I really wasn't. The trust factor that we've built, the learners and I, over the years has been great. And they have my respect. I have theirs, and there's a bond between us that I thought that was stronger than anything else. So it's a business decision. There's business involved, and you got to feel good about the deal. It's got to be the right money and the right time limit and that type of thing. And it was.
But from the Nationals' perspective, I mean, since you've taken over, the winning percentage is .572, which is second best in Major League Baseball to the Dodgers. And I looked it up. It's a two-game difference. It's a two-game difference from being number one. You're .559 and .418, the Nationals are, since you've been running the show. The Dodgers have 561 wins. So just two wins, and you'd be number one.
How much pride do you take in that?
We take a lot of pride in it. It's no easy feat, man. It's a great accomplishment, and there's hundreds of people that are responsible for it. I'm just kind of the figurehead of it and kind of the leader of it. But
What's been the key to this organization's success under you?
Easy question, Life. And it's getting the right people around you. You've got to get smarter, more talented, harder working people than you are. To make you look smarter.
Well, how do you do that? How do you do that?
It's, years of – I've been in the business a long time. I've been in it continually since 1982, and as a player, coach, scout, front office guy, and then GM, and I've known a lot of people. I had a plan in place, years before I got this job of who I was going to hire as my scouting director, farm director, and how we were going to run things, my philosophy, who we look for in players, what's our prototypical pitcher look like, and in our position players, and how do we scout things, and how do I develop them. We've got these quick and fast rules about where are you at in your career in your minor leagues. It, kind of dictates if you are a prospect or not, what type of prospect. It's just, years of foundation and seeing players and talking to people in the industry. It's just, you're lucky that you have that, log to go to.
This might sound silly, but for someone in your position and the people that you hire, what is most important? Is it sort of your ability to kind of set the parameters and know what criteria makes a good ball player, or is it your eye?
Well,
what's more important?
More important is to be able to recognize talent, to have
from paper or by being there and seeing this kid and going, I know this guy can play.
Get all the information, as much information as you can. That's analytics. That's the scouting eye. That's tools that we use.
Do you think you have an extraordinary scouting eye?
I've signed a lot of good players. That's a product of a lot of good people around you, but I've been lucky enough to sign Hall of Famers and Cy Young winners and MVPs my
What's
track
your hit
record
rate?
Is good.
Is your hit rate very high?
My hit rate is I would imagine it's there with
with
some of the good the good scouts. I mean, there's a lot of them, and I haven't scouted in a long time in the field, but I did it for 20 years. I know what they go through, and I think that kind of makes it comfortable for the guys. You know, I've been a scouting, I've been a scouting director, I've been an area scout, I've been a farm director, I've been an advanced scout. All these jobs are different in what they do, how they travel, how do you see your families, the things you miss in, during the year. And I have the experience level that I've done all those jobs, so I know their pain and what they go through.
Is it still a thrill to unearth a guy, to find someone that no one else is kind of on?
It's the best feeling that you could have in baseball is to see a young player that you saw at 16 years old, Victor Robles, for example, or Carlos Gonzalez back in the day when I was in Arizona.
Oh, yeah.
These guys, you know, you're scouting some of these guys. There's literally cows in the outfield that you're working them out in Venezuela,
and now
they're in the big leagues. And you know, some of them are signing multi-year contracts, and it's a great feeling. And again, I have to expound on it. This is a team effort. This isn't a Mike Rizzo show. This is what Mike Rizzo's put together, a great bunch of guys below him, and we grind it out every day. We talk baseball. We talk analytics. We do a lot of different things here. And, you know, the fact that we've come full circle and adapted to to kind of the new ways of doing baseball and incorporated them nicely and blended them nicely with the old.
So we were talking about the Ryan Zimmerman situation. Not that there's a situation, but he took a couple days off. Matt Adams is a great backup, so that's a nice little situation you have there from left side. He's got pop. Is the reason that he hasn't played every day because of what program he was in the spring, or is it weather related?
What's the plan?
Why is it for this? Yeah.
What not? I mean, those are a Davey Martinez question, but
yeah, yeah.
But
so
you know, to me, there's not a health issue or a talent issue or anything like that. There's I know game two of the season against Castillo of the Cincinnati Reds.
Right.
You know, he's a big velocity guy. Matt Adams was a good matchup to him. Matt Adams, for example, our analytics found and Davey found that. You know, against velocity of 95 to 100, Matt Adams hits X, and it's good. And so we felt that this was a good matchup to get Zim a day, to get Matt Adams, more importantly, a day in the lineup. You know, Davey Johnson taught me this a long time ago: is to keep your bench fresh. You've got to play him once or twice a week, because that one at bat, you know, 4 or 5 days is really, really tough. But if you give a guy 4 at-bats in a game, it makes his eye and it makes his job easier coming off the bench at the games.
What is the goal for Zim and the other regular guys? What, 145 games or so? Or is that too low? Like, what is the goal?
Yeah, it depends on where you're at in your career. I mean, you know, if our goal is to keep them healthy all year, and to Davey to give them the breaks and the spells that they need to just maximize their performance. And a lot of things go into it. You know, how is the player that's going to play in place of him? Do you have a very quality backup that's going to fill in for Zim? You know, against some kind of tough right-handed pitcher, if you wanted to give him a break. You know, if you're going to sit Harp, you know, a day or so, you know, why not send him against a really nasty left-handed pitcher? I mean, those only make sense. So those are the kind of things that that Davey and the group talk about. Analytics are used. The scouting mind is used. The advanced scout is involved in it. And, you know, just everyone's baseball acumen is put to the test to put the best lineup on for that particular day.
Harp really looks like he's struggling here.
Yeah, well, you know, Harp, like I said, we've talked about this before, I think, at spring training, is, you know, if Harp is healthy and plays 145 or more games, he's going to be, you know, in the MVP consideration. So he's just that talented of a player.
Did he strike out for the first time yesterday? I think that might
have been. He struck out once.
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
But how many times did the Braves walk
six
him?
Six games.
They walked him like seven
twice
times.
Yesterday.
Yeah, he walks. I think he's got 9 walks or something like that and 1 strikeout this year so far. Yeah, he's seen the ball very, very well. He came out of spring training feeling great, came into spring training in great shape. So, you know, he's on path to have a good year, and it's all with Bryce. It's all about having a healthy season, because if he's in the lineup, he's going to put his numbers up, and he's going to be in a lot of conversations for awards at the end.
Yep.
Joined by Mike Rizzo, president of baseball operations and GM of the Washington Nationals, extended through 2020. Wanted to kind of shift over to something we were talking about earlier. Otani hit a second home run yesterday, and I'm wondering what you were talking about scouting, what you knew about him beforehand. And I thought the Nationals were maybe one of the early players. It seemed like half the league were early players. What did you see him more of, as a pitcher, as a hitter, or both?
Well, you know, a talent like that, we had scouted him extensively. We had, you know, Casey McKeon and Eddie Longo, some of our really good scouts, fly out there over the last couple of years. I think we had seen him. We had six scouts scout him over the last couple of years, so we had a really good book on him. You know, we thought he was a unique, special player and a guy that you know really was. Could be a force on a ball club, and you know, at his price point, where his salary is, and his ability level, he's as valuable as any player in the game.
Did you see him push come to shove, more as a pitcher, more as a hitter?
You know, we liked him in both. We thought he could hit in the middle of a lineup. We thought he could be at the front part of a rotation.
Would you have done both? Like they're trying.
When we gave our presentation, we had a philosophy in mind that we would utilize him as a full time pitcher and a partial part time player, we put a very, very good presentation in place in both in both languages. And
who leads the presentation? Did you lead the presentation?
Yeah, I led the presentation to in accordance with the agent's wishes. And
okay.
I don't think that we were much of a player in that. I think at the end of the day, when we found out that he was going to be he wanted to be on the West Coast, that kind of obviously eliminated us. But he thanked us. He was cordial and thanked us for our interest. And the Angels got themselves a good player.
I gotta imagine there are other guys. Okay, I understand he's a freak, right? He throws 100, the power. But I gotta imagine with all the talent that you see, there are so many great players out there that do put up numbers like that in college,
especially shortstop pitchers. There's so many.
I would think
many.
that combination can't just be the only guy with that kind of ability, right? Are there other guys that you scouted that could potentially do this?
No.
Really?
He's one of the only guys ever.
In the world?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah, I don't we haven't run across many of them.
Honestly, think about all the kids.
Because it's not easy.
I'm not suggesting it's easy, but think about
all the
prospects of you guys that are hitting 500 and they throw 98. I still got to imagine there are guys. Oh, okay, I take your word.
But I guess they don't pitch.
I take your word for it. But
he's a freak. How tall is he? He looks pretty freaking tall.
He's tall. He's 6'3", 6'4"-ish. Yeah, great body. You know, keeps himself in great condition. He's, you know, he can run and he can throw in the outfield, and he's got power and he's got a leverage swing and he's got three good pitches off the mound.
Yes, he
Give
does.
Me Mike Rizzo's favorite opening day. I can tell that you're still excited. By the way, for people that are listening on the radio, if you're watching NBC Sports Washington, you can see he has the best suit I've ever seen in my life in person.
It looks great. He's got the monogram shirt.
He has cufflinks.
Yeah,
he's doing it all. He's got the pocket square.
Looks like a guy just signed a new contract.
Yeah,
yeah, he does.
Well, it's a big day, when I've got a suit and tie, and
it's a big day.
I only go to those places that if you buy one suit, you get two others. You know what I mean? Those are all of
two
my
other
suits.
Sport coats and a couple of shirts.
Yeah, right.
Those are the places I go.
Well, he probably did that at one point in his life.
There's no question about it.
Maybe he was 30.
No question.
But maybe you have a favorite opening day, maybe when you were a player or along your path. I don't know.
You know, opening day has always been – it's always a special day for everybody. And, I look back on the days where, I think if push comes to shove, my favorite opening day memories are when I was in school and you'd ditch school and go out and we'd walk to Wrigley Field. You know, I used to live in,
right.
You know, by Wrigley, and we'd walk to Wrigley Field and, buy a couple dollar bleacher ticket and sit there with my sister or my brothers or that type of thing. And, those were the days because that was special times.
Mm. All right. We have our Burke and Herbert Bank fan question of the week. This one comes from Carol in D.C., She wrote, "What is it going to take to AJ Cole to get on track?
Oh,
and how long of
you knew
a leash?
The AJ Cole question was coming.
And how long of a leash will he have in the fifth starter spot?"
Well, we've got great expectations for AJ. It's what it's going to take for AJ to improve is this is the big leagues. You've got to get players. You got to get hitters out on the white part of the plate. You've got to get guys out in the strike zone, and you can't be nibbling, and you can't be trying to throw the perfect pitch. You've got to be in attack.
Is he guilty of that?
You've got to be in attack mode. Yes,
he had three walks and two innings.
And then your pitch count climbs, and then we're into the bullpen.
So he's not
attacking the
hitters enough.
He's not attacking the strike zone enough, and maybe giving the hitters too much credit.
Gotcha. Mm. Gotcha. But if he does that and gets on track, I mean,
he's got good stuff.
It's not going to be like, who was it? Was it the guy last year that pitched one and gave up 9 runs and then we never saw him again? Remember the guy? Was that 2 years ago?
It was last year.
It was last year, right. That's not the situation with AJ.
No. Yeah. AJ's been a good prospect for us for a long time. We've drafted, signed, and developed him, and we think he's going to be a factor on the team.
That was the old vet, and I'm forgetting his name. Who was that? Why are we not remembering his name?
Mike doesn't remember it. Yeah. That's hilarious.
It was the old guy.
You're not talking about Guthrie.
Yeah, Jeremy Guthrie.
Yeah, Guthrie was in there for one start, gave up 9 runs in an inning or whatever, and that was it.
For a 1 o'clock game, what time did the guys get here to start pregaming it?
You know, we got in about 9:30 last night after a long road trip and after all spring training. Guys aren't even unpacked yet, so I think we're in the clubhouse today. Was at 10 o'clock for 1 o'clock, but usually we're here about 5 hours before first pitch.
Wow. All right, Mike, good luck. Congratulations!
It's a great matchup today, Strassi and DeGrom. It'll be a good one to see.
It's a great day the team, a great day for you personally, and a great day for us as fans. So thank you.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
All right, Mike.
That is the GM and president of the Washington Nationals, brought to you by Burke and Herbert Bank. Unexpectedly different as we go in the clubhouse with Mike Rizzo every week. Coming up next, we'll talk Tiger Woods. Armin Katayan, co-authored a biography called Tiger Woods. He'll join us next as we talk a little Masters here on The Fan.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Welcome back. Junkies coming to you live from Nationals Park, where opening day is just hours away. Join us right now on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline, because it is day one at the Masters.
Yep.
Is Armin Katayan, who co-authored a biography with Jeff Benedict called Tiger Woods. It's hit number 5
Can't
on the New York Times bestseller list.
Can't wait to read it.
Good morning, Armin.
Armin, how are you?
Hey, guys. How are you? I'm good, man. So you're at the park? That's nice.
Oh, man, it's cold as
it's cold. We'd rather be in studio.
It would be nicer if we were inside the press box, but we're out on the field.
We're out on the field, but it's very cold.
Wow.
Opening day. There's nothing like it.
Armin, are you down at the Masters this week or no?
No, I'm home relaxing and resting from this book. It took 3 years of my life, and the last thing I want to do is get on a plane and go anywhere at this point in time.
I bet.
I hear you.
And Armin, we've had you on the show. We've been doing this for 22 years, so you don't remember. But we've had you on the show several times. Every time we interview you, I always have to preface it by saying that probably the my favorite sports book of all time was Raw Recruits.
Yep.
And I just thought it was great for its time. It was amazing. I always, even to this day, when people ask me their favorite books they've ever read,
there,
I always say Raw Recruits.
Yeah. Thank you.
And, you know, no, really, just an amazing book. And really, when you hear the college basketball scandal that's going on now, I mean, you exposed this stuff 20-some years ago. This can't – I mean, it's not a surprise to any of us that follow this, but this is the kind of stuff you wrote about 20 years ago.
Yeah, 28 years ago. 1990, Raw Recruits came out when Alexander Wolf and I were both at Sports Illustrated, I had just left SI, right, actually, to go to ABC News. And, I think it's just – it's more of the same because, and even worse, because there's just so much, you know, money that has poured into the sport in the last, you know, decade or so with the contracts now between CBS and Turner. You're looking at $1 billion a year, and you know, the risk reward in college basketball has never been higher. You try to recruit one or two kids in basketball that can really change a program and put you in a Final Four or deep into the tournament. And you run that risk against or that reward against the risk of getting caught. And you know, now that the FBI is involved and the federal government, it's changed the game, the equation. But still, you know, there's a lot of people out there that are willing to roll the dice.
So let's talk about this book, Tiger, Tiger Woods, that you started, you say, 3 years ago. And, I mean, I get it. You're talking about, I think, one, the most dominant athlete of my lifetime. You know, there was a three-year stretch there where he won 52% of his starts, I think. I mean, just unbelievable. But then the downfall that we all know about and the continuous comebacks, perfect timing for you with the way that coming back right now. But what was the impetus for this book for you? Because I would have thought that I kind of know the Tiger Woods story by now, but I'm sure you've unearthed new details.
Well, we have. And it, when we started to talk about it, we were coming off the system, the really deep dive Jeff Benedict and I did into big-time college football. We were looking for another sort of mountain to climb, and our agent suggested Tiger, and we thought the same thing originally. My God, everything that could be possibly written about him has been written, but the deeper we looked, we found that all the books that had been written, either by him or his father or people close to him, were all segmented into certain parts of his life, either after he turned pro or after the scandal. There had never been a complete 360-degree immersive look, a real biographical look into his life, going all the way back to Earl's birth and his childhood in Manhattan, Kansas, right up through today. And then the other thing we said to each other was, well, how many people in the world are really known by one word? And you can probably name them on the fingers of one hand. Tiger's certainly at the top of that list. So, you know, we started doing what we do. We read everything of significance, and I mean thousands and thousands of pages of either books or articles, and then constructed a huge timeline. We looked at all his major press conferences that he had held, and then we started doing really the serious interviewing, and we ended up talking to more than 250 people, many who had never talked before, in 400 interviews overall. And, you know, we've created a book that has been, I mean, seriously, and I'm not patting myself too hard on the back, but critically acclaimed by everybody from the New York Times to Bloomberg to Golf Digest to the Wall Street Journal to the Financial Times to the London Times. So we're extremely proud of what we've done.
You should be. Talk about, you know, how you approached Tiger and his camp and what were the parameters. I think he agreed to talk to you, but only based on their rules, which is not shocking.
What we did was we reached out originally in January of 2016, which was 2 years before what the pub date was. And we spoke to or emailed Glenn Greenspan, his chief spokesman, and said, look, we'd like to just discuss the possibility of an interview, knowing that in the past they've been very resistant to any kind of outside endeavors. And what we got in return was an email that said before they would, quote unquote, consider any potential interview, we had to tell them everybody who we had talked to, both on the record and on background, what they said to us. And then we had to provide them with a list of questions that we would ask Tiger, which were conditions that no serious journalist would ever consent to. And it basically devolved from there. I will say, though, surprisingly, there's a chapter in the book called Miracle Workers, which deals with the entire question and the suspicions of performance-enhancing drugs with Tiger. And he did something that basically shocked Jeff and I. He signed a doctor-patient waiver, a legal document that allowed his longtime chiropractor, Dr. Mark Lindsay, who had worked on Tiger for hundreds of hours in 08 and 09 after his major knee injury, to write a declaration, a legal four-page statement in which he talks about his treatment of Tiger and his belief that Tiger did not use any kind of performance-enhancing drugs. So it's a definite line in the sand, and it's the most definitive, authoritative statement to date on that issue that has really kind of hovered over Tiger for, what, the last 15 years of his career.
Which I'm sorry, Armin, because I missed when you said it. Which doctor is this that declared this?
He's a Canadian chiropractor, Dr. Mark Lindsay, who is extremely well known in the world of elite athletes.
Right. Yeah. Right. Because those that are not now, you don't know this, obviously, but I've been a huge Tiger supporter. I don't know how he is as a person. I have my suspicions. But as a golf fan, strictly golf fan, a huge fan of this guy. Can't help root for him every time I see him out on the course. But those that have knocked him through the years would always point to that. And I just thought that it was just too easy. And I always had my suspicions that, I mean, who knows? But the general public, we're so cynical. I think a large percentage of people just assume, of course he did performance-enhancing drugs. He had the appointment
like
with
Dr. most Galea. Athletes.
Yeah, they had the appointment with Dr. Galea, so of course he did, and I just didn't think it was that simple. So I'm glad you got somebody on the record
that
says he didn't believe that.
It's not it's the third rail for him. It's the one thing that if you're a journalist and you allege, and I mean, you know, you make that connection that said he is using performance-enhancing drugs, you can expect a lawsuit on the way on the back end, unless you have 100%, you know, bulletproof. And that, and we look, I looked long and hard. I'm pretty good at this stuff. And I was never provided any concrete proof that we were willing to stake our journalistic reputations on. And I, you're right, because I'll tell you one thing that we learned. He works harder than almost any athlete I've ever seen in my life. Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, Tiger Woods, Lance Armstrong, they are a world of their own. And so much of Tiger's size and how he physically changed the game came from an obsession in the weight room and a desire for perfection in his game. And yes, it's so easy to say, as many have suspected, including a lot of tour pros, that he was using something. Well, unless you can prove it, you better be really careful about what you're saying in public.
We're talking to Ara McIntyre, co-authored a biography with Jeff Benedict called Tiger Woods, top five right now on New York Times bestseller list. He's killing it. I can't wait to read it. Armin, I know a lot of the research you did was based on Tiger's relationship with his parents, especially his dad. You know, Tiger was not raised as a normal kid. He just wasn't. He was a prodigy. And his dad was not a good guy. He was not a good father, based on what we know. And he just wasn't raised like a normal kid would be raised. And his dad, Earl, was not a normal dad. What was kind of the most shocking thing that you guys found out in your research and interviews about his relationship with Earl?
Well, it's a very complicated relationship. I mean, to understand Tiger Woods, you need to understand Earl Woods, his father, and as almost as much, Tita, his mother. They are the yin and yang of his life, and you're right, they programmed him from a very early age for greatness, to change the game of golf. From 11 months old when he crawled out of the high chair and took his first swing, but really from 2 years old when they were guiding him, you could argue pushing him in a direction of for publicity, whether it was Jim Hill's sports show in Los Angeles, but then the Mike Douglas show, then That's Incredible. But then you have this very shy, socially awkward, nerdy kind of kid, very intelligent, who's gifted with not only what his parents are providing, but gifted with greatness, a genius, as it turns out. But there's an enormous price to pay, not only for that genius, but in that relationship, that family dynamic. And you're right, Earl was a great father in a lot of ways. He brought great passion to Tiger for the game. He taught him the importance of practice. He was a voice in his ear, helping him as he grew up during his amateur career. But he was, you know, he had a dark side. He was a wanton womanizer. He was a bigamist. I mean, he was married to another woman for 3 years, and we document it in the book. When he finally got divorced in 1972 in California, he had been married to Tita for 3 years. They got married in New York in 1969. Now, Earl would never admit that over hot coals, but that's the truth. And Tiger saw things with his dad, and put yourself in your own life and seeing your dad hitting on girls at a 7-Eleven or, you know, drunk in public and making these outlandish statements that Tiger had to live up to. He put a lot of expectations on Tiger's shoulders, and Tiger took it all. And never barked about it or spoke a bad word about his father. But don't think for a second he didn't carry all that stuff inside, and that didn't help form the kind of person he was, and to a certain degree he still is today.
Are you surprised at how well he's playing this year?
Well, I'm shocked, because if you had talked to me a year ago, you know, Memorial Day weekend, when he was found on the side of the road in Florida, slumped over the wheel of his car and could barely, I mean, he had a rock star cocktail of pain-killing and mood-altering drugs in his system. Jeff and I were like, you know, we're 2.5 years or 2 years into the project, and we're we're talking every single day, and we're thinking, wow, is this how it ends? Is this the Shakespearean tragedy that we're, you know, about to, you know, complete this book with? And then, in miracle of all miracles, the spinal fusion works, and he crawls out of this deep, dark, cavernous hole in the opiate addiction that he was fighting into the light. And whatever happens Sunday or whatever happens the rest of, you know, his career, we fully believe that he did something that very few child stars and child prodigies, and you can look at Michael Jackson or Elvis Presley or, you know, Prince or anybody like that, have never made it out of that hole. He made it out because of his indomitable will. And it's our belief and it's our argument that whether he wins another tournament again, that triumph transcends anything he's ever done inside the ropes.
Quickly, Arm, we don't have much time, but I wanted you to tell the story because I heard you doing an interview with Russo, and it was great. It was riveting. Can you tell the story about when Tiger broke up with his girlfriend in the hotel by writing the letter?
Well, it was awful. I mean, you know, Dina Gravel, who's a big part of the early, you know, part of our book, and the first true love for Tiger Woods, she was the one that he would confide in about his parents and what was going on with his dad. And they loved each other. And he's at a tournament when he's at Stanford, and she comes up, her parents come up, and all of a sudden Earl and Tita show up at a Stanford tournament, which they rarely, if ever, did. And then Tiger and Dina are staying in their own separate hotel room. She goes over to see her parents, who are in another hotel room. And all of a sudden her dad gets a message from downstairs that there's a package and some things down there for you. He goes down and it's Dina's suitcase, and it's all her belongings that were in the hotel room. And there's a note accompanying it. And it's a very, it's kind of a very cold note from Tiger, saying that Dina had talked about being his girlfriend. How dare you do that? Which she didn't do. And it broke her heart. I mean, it was a heartbreaking moment in the book. But trust me, it wasn't Tiger that he may have written the note, but it was Earl and Tita who were basically saying.
It was Earl's words, yeah.
Right, yes, exactly. Yeah. You're an impediment. You're an obstacle to our son's professional career on the horizon, and you need to be systematically removed, which
she
was.
How did you find the girlfriend? How did you find the girlfriend?
She had popped up after the 2010 scandal. She had popped up with a few quotes about, you know, her relationship with Tiger. And to Jeff's ever-loving credit, he really formed a relationship over the phone and in emails with Dina, and she really opened up to us. And it's one of the parts of the book. You know, we didn't write this book for the golfers. We wrote it. Parts of the book are great for the, like me, I'm a golfer, I love it. But Jeff's never picked up a club in his life. And it's really, it's a story that transcends golf in so many ways. And you know, my wife, who doesn't read much of what I write, is in the midst of reading this right now, and she can't put it down. And that's kind of who we were writing it for, because it's not just for men, it's for women, it's for people that love stories about rising from the ashes and, you know, this sort of Shakespearean drama that's gone on in Tiger's life.
Well, congratulations on the success. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Armin.
Called
My pleasure,
Tiger
guys.
Woods. And
you're
it's
the man.
Up to number 5 on the New York Times bestseller.
Have fun
list.
Today.
Thanks so much.
You're the
best.
Yeah, right. We'll do it again. Thank you, Armin.
Talk to you soon, Armin.
All right, that's Armin Katan. Coming up next, Hal Alter, who's the VP of Nationals Youth Baseball Academy, will join us. Keep it here on the Junkies as we're live from opening day at Nationals Park. Welcome back. Junkies coming to you live from Nationals Park. Live on 106.7 The Fan and NBC Sports Washington. As the show has gone on, we've come back later and later because we go away and try and get warm.
Everyone's panicking.
But joining us right now is Tal Alter, the VP of Nationals Youth Baseball Academy. They're doing great things. Nice suit as well, man. I'm just envious of everybody's suits.
We probably should have dressed better.
I just took like my suit to the dry cleaner yesterday.
Your one
just
suit?
So nubby. I have three. I think.
You got three? That's
I've got
that's
one.
Good. That's good. That's good for
one. Buy one, get two free, B.
But Tal, it's great to have you on this show. Thanks for joining us. Tell us about the National Youth Baseball Academy. Tell us all
you guys
about
do
this.
Stuff with softball too, right?
We do, absolutely. So our organization is a nonprofit under the Nationals umbrella. And our mission is to use baseball and softball as vehicles to foster positive character development, academic enrichment, improved health. And we focus on youth who are living in underserved parts of the city, so Ward 7 and 8 in particular. And we have a program for kids to participate throughout the year from 3rd through 8th grade. So 3 days a week after school, 3:30 to 7:30, 6 weeks during the summer, full-day programming, and it's holistic in nature. So,
is it easy to get them interested in baseball? Because by the time you get to third grade, a lot of times your interests are formed.
Right.
How do you get kids that may not be into baseball that are living in the city to get interested in baseball? And
got
to
get them early,
girls getting
right?
softball.
Yes, absolutely. And so I wouldn't call it part of our mission, but of course we're very aware of the demographics in baseball and Major League Baseball's interest in changing those demographics. And so you're right that you got to start baseball early. It's a sport that is a complicated sport to learn, and there's a lot of failure. If you start late, it's harder to feel good playing and failing. Mm-hmm. Third grade's not quite too late. So we feel like if it's relentlessly positive, if we have really good coaches and we create an environment that is conducive to kids feeling safe to fail, they will have fun playing the game. And they'll be willing to try it more and more. But we've also expanded our programs. We actually start with kids at 4 years old now.
Wow.
So we'll have 600 kids in a program we call YBA Play this summer, and that's going to be in Ward 5, Ward 6, and Ward 7.
So that's T-ball probably.
Yeah, T-ball, though we try not to incorporate a T if we don't have to.
Right.
So the way we're teaching the game is we actually modify the rules to make it really fast-paced and increase the amount of opportunities to be successful. And so kids are having a certain number of at-bats per inning rather than outs, as an example. Their coach is pitching from just a few feet away. If they swing and miss a couple times, we put on the tee and we get it going.
Nice.
And kids can earn extra at-bats by hustling off the field in less than 8 seconds. They can.
I like that.
They can earn at-bats by everyone standing up in the dugout and cheering. So we're trying to make the game fun and control the controllables. If kids get good at that, they'll want to keep playing the game because they just have fun coming out and doing it.
You guys get tremendous support from the Nats, obviously, right? What
yes.
players have gotten involved?
Anthony Rendon is on our board, and he has been a fantastic advocate for what we do. In addition to donating his time and money, he's just an authentic.
He seems like a good dude.
He's a good dude.
Yeah.
That just bottom line.
You've worked with Max too, right?
Yeah, Max. Max actually does a fantasy football draft, which is one of our biggest fundraisers, and Grant and Danny have mm-hmm. hosted it.
Cakes did
Cakes
it last
was in that
year.
Too. Yeah.
Cakes
yeah.
was in it last year. I don't know how well he fared, but he was there.
He tried to play it off that he has like 10 teams. That one wasn't like a big focus.
Right.
Focuses
right.
on his money leagues more.
Right. I was gonna say there wasn't enough money involved, so maybe he didn't
right.
try
he'd take it as serious.
Yeah. But all the things that I'm talking about, you know, I think for listeners, you know, my biggest request to you would be consider coming out and participating. We have more than 100 people who are volunteering between being mentors in our after-school program or coaching baseball, and we provide you with all the support you need. So you don't have to be a professional baseball coach or even someone who's done a lot of it before. And you all know, your parents, you have kids playing youth sports. It's different today than it was when we were growing up. You need adults to be coordinating activities for kids, for them to participate in organized sports.
Otherwise, they'll stay in and play Fortnite all day.
All yeah. day.
Yeah.
Yep.
And so we're doing that. We're doing the heavy lifting. We're just bringing people out from the community to do the coaching. And that way, kids get the access to the opportunity. Plus, it's free for them. And that's another big barrier, especially in baseball.
Very cool. Very cool. So what do people have to do to get involved? What's the best thing for them to do right now?
I would encourage them to go to our website, nationalsacademy.org. Please follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Nats Academy. And if you just want to send us an email, academy.info@nationals.com, we will answer it. Any way that you're interested in getting involved, we can help you out there.
All right, yeah. Tal, thank you so much for joining us.
Good stuff, Tal
Alter, thank you.
VP you staying for the game today?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, believe it.
What are they doing now? What is that? Is that the...
I think they're just,
anthem?
You know, starting to work out the national anthem. He's starting to get some action. It looks like we got a couple players on the field now.
Yeah, Matt Harvey just walked by.
Very nice.
Oh, did he?
Yeah. This
will be a good game today with Strassi and DeGrom going at
it. We do need to thank the Nationals. You know, we've been
feel like the gates of heaven are opening.
We've been commenting about how cold it is, and we have survived.
You didn't feel like that at 6.
4
no.
hours. Thank you to the Nationals for having us out here. And really an exciting day because it's Nats opening day, which is awesome. They're 4-2 home opener for the Nationals. And then Mike Rizzo, who joined us, has been extended till 2020. So
yep.
That's something that we thought we were going to kind of reference throughout the year. That story's done.
Story's over
for a while.
And you know what?
Story is kaput.
And he deserved an extension too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Really
long time.
And thank
comment.
You to the Nats for giving me some gloves.
Right.
Harrelin came by and brought us some gloves.
I had to give mine to Lisa because I think they're smalls. I mean, they're the world's smallest gloves.
They're a little snug.
Got to get the Under Armour
money. But you know what? Right. It's better than nothing.
Right.
I'll take them.
All right, so Bickle, you and I are – I don't know if JP's staying for the game, but you and I are heading off to go watch the Masters.
I will be monitoring the game, but, yes, I'll be home.
I'll be previous channeling the Masters with the game.
All right, so tomorrow we will talk some Masters. We need to get out of here for Bish.
Yep.
EB, I'm JP. Grant and Danny
Thank you
coming
guys.
Up next.
Thanks for all
right
your help.
On the Fan.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.